Welcome to the Staying Ages podcast, a show that will equip you with the major keys to achieve extraordinary longevity. This is your girl, Associate E. I'm a certified nutrition specialist and behavioral coach. And today on the show, we'll be talking about how regenerative medicine can support longevity. To get this longevity party started, we'll delve into the benefits of personalized medicine. And later today, we'll be chatting with our amazing special guest, Dr. Vasily Eliopoulos. I am so grateful to have each and every one of you tuning into the show from all over the world. Shout out to listeners in the UAE, the USA, the UK, Ireland, Spain, South Africa, France, Germany, and much more. If today's show inspires you, I'm inviting you to go ahead and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It means the world to me to get feedback, so any reviews are much appreciated. Hey y'all, hey, we are back. And today I have an amazing guest. Literally, it's actually probably one of my favorite conversations that I've had on this podcast. I'm super excited to talk about regenerative medicine today. I'm really excited for you guys to hear our conversation and grab the nuggets of wisdom that I picked up myself. When people think about regenerative medicine, the first thing that likely comes to mind, if you have heard of it, is stem cells. What are stem cells? Well, they're a type of cell that has a unique capacity for self-renewal, meaning they can replicate and produce identical copies of themselves, and they also possess the potential to differentiate into specific cell types with distinct functions. There are two primary types of stem cells. So there are embryonic stem cells. These stem cells are derived from embryos, usually at the blastocyst stage. And they have the potential to differentiate into cells of all three embryonic germ layers, so endoderm, mesoderm, or ectoderm. And because they're really versatile, they're really valuable for research and therapeutic purposes. Then there are adult or somatic stem cells, also known as tissue-specific or somatic stem cells. These are found in various tissues throughout our bodies. Adult stem cells are multipotent, meaning they have the ability to differentiate into a limited range of cell types related to the tissue in which they're found. And these are really crucial for tissue repair, regeneration, and maintenance. So in today's episode, we're going to be talking about regenerative medicine. We'll get more into all of this. But first, I really want to talk about personalized medicine and just the importance of bioindividuality in nutrition. And I think I may have already spoken about this, but I mean, it's one of my favorite things to talk about. Have you ever wondered why one size fits all approaches to health just don't cut it? Because I always tell myself and my patients, one person's perfect food is another person's poison. After seeing thousands of patients, I am very, very sure of that fact, that it is really important that diet and nutrition be tailored to the specific person who's in front of me. So why does bioindividuality matter in nutrition? Well, gone are the days of one-size-fits-all diets. Y'all remember all them diet books? Child, the Zone diet, this diet, the Atkins diet. I mean, there was so many diets. And I think we've all realized that that just doesn't work. Your body is unique. And what it needs to thrive is as individual as you are. And that's where the bioindividuality comes in. It's about recognizing that each of us is a biochemical individual with unique nutritional needs. So no more generic diets that treat everyone the same. Not going to work. If you're still doing that, child, get off that bandwagon, okay? It's time to unlock the full potential of your body by understanding what truly nourishes you on a cellular level. The cellular level is the part that mostly fascinates me, because when we embrace bioindividuality, we tap into a personalized approach to nutrition that can enhance our energy, support our metabolism, and optimize our overall well-being. So if you're still out here, I'm going to say one more time, if you are still out here doing cookie cutter meal plans, please let them go. If you're just up here changing your diet every other week based on some blog post or TikTok thing that you saw, child, please stop. So you may be asking me, well, Houseway, how do I individualize my diet? How do I make it individualized for me? Well, here's a few things you can think about. Even if you don't have the budget for genetic testing or like deeper testing, you can learn your body type. This is a big thing that I teach women in staying ages 30 plus. And I actually help all of my clients understand their body type, because as I'm working with people, I immediately identify their body type. And that tells me so much information about them and how to help them and where they're out of balance. And so when you learn your body type and you really understand this is what works for me, this is what doesn't, you're already way ahead of the game. Then you want to look at what your ancestors and your predecessors ate. Now, we all come from different parts of the world. You know, my family hails from Nigeria. There are certain things that I just won't eat because I just don't feel like it gels with me. Now, it's great to expand and try new things and have variety, but it's important to think about, what worked for my ancestors? What were the things that were staples then? And, you know, some of them may have been cooked in a manner that was unhealthy, and you could always change that. But it's important to look at it. I remember in my early 20s, I was on this tofu soy bandwagon so hard, and my skin was horrible, and it really made my periods really horrible. And it was when I had this aha moment where I was like, is anybody in Nigeria eating tofu? And I had that moment where I was like, no. And none of my ancestors ate tofu. I think I'm good because I don't think it works well for me. And it really did balance out my hormones to leave it alone. So even to this day, I just try to stay away from it as much as possible. And if I consume it, I can only consume it in very, very small quantities, but I just try to avoid it altogether. The third thing is pay attention to what diseases run in your family and what's affecting you now. So what health imbalances do you have now? You're going to have to individualize. You're going to have to think about how to eat in a way now to reverse the issues you're dealing with currently. But then you're also going to have to think about, okay, what did my grandmama have? What did my mother have? You know, the aunties and them, all of them have, you know, diabetes, or they have hypertension, they have this. So what are the ways that you can transform your diet? You don't want to be eating in the same manner that they ate, or else you're basically walking into the same health destiny that they're in. So what you want to do is then pay attention to those diseases and then tailor your lifestyle to ensure that you don't live into that. Then you want to address any and all nutritional deficiencies or hormone imbalances. This is a big one. And this is just, you know, keeping up with your blood work. You know, blood work is awesome. You can get all the, you know, the basics that you can get from your doctor. And then, you know, if you want something more extensive, come to my office or go to a functional medicine office, because we can order things like that test for 150 nutritional biomarkers, you know, that test for a lot more. And so if you really want to get deep into, like, you know, what nutrients my body needs, you can do that kind of testing. You can even do, we also order, like, for staying ages 30 plus, we order genetic testing that even goes deeper into the nutrients needed based on genetic SNPs, even cooler. So there's, you know, different levels you can geek out at when it comes to nutritional deficiencies, but just the basics even will help you a great deal, ensuring that you're vitamin D sufficient, vitamin B12, that you have normal levels of iron, your CBC is normal, your complete blood count is normal, all of those things you see. And then hormone imbalances, you know, I work with so many women who are struggling with, you know, horrible periods. And if that is you, definitely deal with that, because that is really important. You want your diet to be tailored to help you address that, because it can. And so you're missing out on your healing if you're not changing your diet and you have a hormone imbalance, or you have horrible periods, or you have fibroids, endometriosis, et cetera. And we work with women in the Hormone Balancing Academy in a 6-month concerted time frame to address all those things. And then the last thing I'll say is, you know, pay attention to what your body needs now at the age you are, for the activity level you have, and for your hormonal stage if you are a woman. Because women go through so many hormonal stages, it's really important for us to just really pay attention to, like, where am I right now? What worked for me in my 20s may not work now. If you're 40-something now, you might want to reconsider, you know. You look at your activity level, look at, you know, how much protein do I actually really need now? How much do I need additional rest now? You know, most of us need additional rest as we start to age. So pay attention to all of that, because again, as we individualize, we also don't want to get stuck in a rut and stuck in doing things that worked for us yesterday, when our body is literally evolving all the time. And so because our body is evolving based on external, you know, inputs, then we also have to, you know, make sure that we understand ourselves. So the thing that you can keep constant. You know your body type, you know this, but you're going to evolve your nutrition to also support yourself through your different phases. Okay. Well, my theory, my hope, and an opinion, the game changer would be if we could just get to the place where all of us were interested in personalized medicine, you know? So imagine a world where your healthcare is tailored specifically to you, your genes, your lifestyle, your unique needs. And that's really the essence of personalized medicine. And it's an approach that recognizes the individuality of each person. So we're looking everything from your biomarkers to genomics. You're really going to delve into understanding your unique genetic code and then use that as a foundation to work with a practitioner to design your lifestyle, your diet, and the treatments that you need. So some key components of personalized medicine include things like genomics. So the study of an individual's genetic makeup, like I mentioned, and that includes analyzing DNA to identify genetic variations that can influence your response to certain medications or susceptibility to specific diseases. And then, of course, biomarkers, measurable indicators such as proteins, genetic markers, they can be used to assess the presence or progress of disease. Okay. And those biomarkers can help us identify the most effective treatments for individual patients. And then based on the genetic and molecular profile of a patient, then the healthcare provider can develop a treatment plan that is tailored to your specific characteristics. So it may involve selecting medications that are more likely to be effective and avoiding treatments that could be less beneficial for your specific genetic makeup. That's what I think is so cool. And I really wish that that was already happening all the time. I know it happens in some people's offices, but I wish that was happening all the time. It also involves diagnostics. So the development of diagnostic tools that can rapidly and accurately identify genetic or molecular markers relevant to your condition. So it allows for more precise and timely diagnosis. And then also predictive and preventative. So personalized medicine shouldn't only aim to treat existing conditions, but also predict and prevent any future disease. So by understanding an individual's genetic predisposition and their risk factors, healthcare providers can actually implement preventive measures or early interventions, which is so dope. There's so much stuff that we could be doing to prevent people from getting sick. But right now we're in a very reactive healthcare world where we're just waiting till people get sick. And then we're like, hey, do this, take this. But what if we started thinking ahead and like, hey, I see where this is going, or I see you have this in your family line. Let's prevent it now, you know? And then targeted therapies. In the context of cancer treatment, personalized medicine can involve the use of targeted therapies that focus on specific molecular characteristics of a patient's cancer cells. This can result in more effective and less harmful treatments, but also you can do targeted therapies for any condition that someone has, really, if you're very specific. So yes, I am excited. That is where I believe the world is going. And my guest today, I feel like is someone who's an example of this personalized approach. I hope you have a clear understanding of taking a personalized approach and why it can be very beneficial for you. We're going to take a break now. And when we return, we're going to delve deeper into regenerative medicine with our amazing guest. So stay tuned. Are you a woman struggling with horrible periods, fibroids, endometriosis, PCOS, infertility, or unsavory menopausal symptoms? I'm Asosa E, also known as The Raw Girl of TheRawGirl.com. I'm a certified nutrition specialist and behavioral coach. And in my Hormone Balancing Academy, me and my team can help you approach any hormonal challenge you are facing from a holistic perspective. Don't take my word only for it. Here's a snippet from a recent client whose fibroid shrunk after following my recommendations.
Come to find out, my fibroid shrunk to a 1.5. Yes, Jesus. I was so happy and grateful to God and Asosa, and, you know, just her program really. Outside of my fiery shrinking, I am off of chicken, so I don't do meat. Yes, Jesus. And I don't do dairy. We don't do that anymore. And my weight is steadily at 101 pounds as of today. So my weight did go up. So I'm really happy with my results. I'm really grateful to God and to Asosa and her Raw Girl program. And I highly, highly, highly recommend you sign up for Raw Girl. You won't regret it.
Just in case you missed it, head on back to season 6 and hear more of the amazing glow up stories from women who have overcome infertility, normalized incessant periods, and much more. If you or someone you know are interested in reaching your hormonal health goals with support this year, visit therawgirl.com to sign up for a free 20-minute call, and a member of our team will talk to you. Until then, stay healthy and happy. Dr. Eliopoulos is the co-founder of Rocky Mountain Regenerative Medicine, a medical clinic in Boulder, Colorado that specializes in regenerative medicine. Regenerative medicine is a powerful new branch of medicine that uses a patient's biology, stem cells, to naturally heal the body from disease, injury, or simply aging. With a team of 6+, Rocky Mountain Regenerative Medicine has helped hundreds of people, including top athletes, perform better, feel younger, and live longer, healthier lives than they ever believed possible by leveraging the most sophisticated diagnostics and regenerative therapies. Dr. Eliopoulos earned his medical degree from the prestigious Cornell University Medical College, whoop whoop, that's my alma mater, and has practiced medicine for 20 plus years. He has contributed to many medical studies, including the largest study to date on the use of stem cell therapy to treat spinal disorders. Dr. Eliopoulos is also a highly sought-after speaker who has given talks on how to better treat different illnesses, improve human health, and extend life at national and international medical and medical startup conferences. Dr. Vas Eliopoulos, I am super excited to have you on the Staying Ageless podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So I really loved reading about what you're doing. I just think what you're doing is awesome. And I would love to just start with how the journey of how people get led to certain things is usually more fascinating sometimes. So I'm curious as how you got into regenerative medicine and how you got into what you're doing now with your practice and everything.
Yeah. Great question. I think to answer that properly, I have to look back into sort of my roots, and my roots ethnically are, my father's side of the family is Greek. And I spent a lot of time as a young child in the village where my grandparents came from, where they live a very, and it's changing now, but where they lived a very traditional Greek Mediterranean lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And so I grew up seeing that, there's a different way to, live, different way to eat. And among other things, a different way to live your life, period. And so, having that sort of different perspective was foundational for me.
Mm.
There are a couple of other things like that in my life. I'm dyslexic.
Mm.
Academics were always very difficult for me. And so there again, I had to find a different way to achieve success than most people in academics. Mm. And then finally, my Peace Corps experience was sort of the final period, maybe not the period at the end of the paragraph, but a big accentuator where, I spent 2 years in the South Pacific in the Solomon Islands. And, from a kid who grew up outside of New York City, and, where I lived was fairly rural.
Mm.
But we were an hour from, you know, an hour train ride from Grand Central Station. And so, you know, the way I phrase that is when I got off the plane in the Solomon Islands for the first time, I personally felt like you like it could have been Mars. Mm. That's how different it was. I mean, it just that's how different the life there was. And so at a few different sort of like key important points in my life, I saw like there are different ways to do things.
Right.
And so, you know, the through line from there to medicine is, you know, I feel like most doctors still go into medicine for the right reasons. We want to care for people. We want to do the right thing. We want to give back to the community and to our patients. And the system is not set up to do that. Mm-hmm. And most physicians, and I was stuck there for a long time where I was just miserable. I hated what I was doing.
Wow.
I didn't know what to do. Cause I was like, I mean, my whole life I've been working hard to do this thing.
Right.
And now I'm here. And not only is it not what I thought I was going to be doing, now I'm stuck because What am I going to do? Am I going to go to law school or business school or, you know, what different specialty? And so ultimately what happened was my partner and I, we were in the same boat. We were feeling the same way. And we just said, there has to be a different way to do this.
Yeah.
And we're going to do it. And we made the jump and our colleagues thought we were insane.
Right.
Because we were trying to get so we're a partnership of two. We were trying to get other physicians who we admired and liked to kind of come with us.
Yeah.
But that kind of jump, most physicians are not, you know, you're leaving security.
Yeah.
You're leaving, you know, there are enough good things. I mean, let's face it, physicians make good money. Mm-hmm. And so the thought that you're going to give that up and the security of that for what a lot of people would say is, you know, a feeling or an idea, an ethos of an ideal of what medicine really can be.
Right.
People think that's insane.
Right.
And we said, you know, I mean, at least I'll speak for myself personally. I was like, well, I can't do it that way anymore. That's killing me.
Yeah.
So I have to find another way.
I love and that.
Because I knew through my life, like I've seen that there's always another way. There's always another way. Mm. And so, you know, I think we've found a way that works for us. We've found a way that works for our clients. It's not perfect because at least for me personally, you know, I didn't want to start a practice where really the people who can afford to see us are people with the money to do it.
Yeah.
And there, you know, I mean, there is a part of me that, you know, I would like to have this kind of care be accessible to everyone.
Yeah.
And, you know, and really, I mean, what I would argue is I think where we want to go, that's where we're going. We have to find a way to make this kind of medicine the default.
Yes. Yes.
And so that's really our sort of our core mission.
I love it. I feel like I'm in the same exact space mentally. I've just been like, okay, I have these clients that can afford me. And I deal with a lot of, deal with all kinds of chronic conditions, but I also deal with a lot of women with fibroids, endometriosis, PCOS, all the hormonal stuff. And we've been able to help people shrink fibroids, get rid of all the symptoms, get their periods back, get pregnant, even without IVF, all kinds of stuff, right?
It's amazing.
And it's the people that are struggling with this, you know, the panic, the fear, the number of people struggling with this is too much. And so mentally, I just my heart is just like, how can I, like, there's gotta be a way to try to make it accessible to more people. And then at the same time, I don't want to do the McDonald's insurance situation. So I'm like, I'm still want to like give people filet mignon service, you know? So I don't really know. I don't have all the answers yet, but I'm working on it. But I'm in the same place as you. I completely agree.
Well, I think, you know, the only way I knew how to do it was, you know, be the change you want to see, right? And I think kudos to you for do, because it sounds to me like that's what you're doing. Like, that's amazing. And, you know, things have a way of happening. And so we're, you know, so we're sort of at a transition point where, you know, we have partnered with someone who has a lot of business experience scaling businesses. And I think what's most important for me there is that our missions align.
Yeah.
And finding somebody with, because we've, you know, a lot of people, we live in Boulder. It's an affluent, you know, well-educated, you know, I think open-minded community. This community is open to this kind of medical care. It has the disposable income to be able to afford it. But the mission is still, how do we get beyond that? And to find someone with the business acumen who knows, okay, so how do we do this? And so I think for the first time, I think we might actually be somewhere where we might be able to sort of start cracking that, whatever that is.
Right.
You know? And so right. I don't think it's, I don't think this is a, you know, 2 or 3 year process. This is the beginning of a long, long process. But I start with what you know and have your heart and your intention in the right place and things start happening.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to say it other than that.
Yeah. No, I love that. And I was going to ask you later in the conversation, like, where you'd like to see the future of medicine. But I feel like you are implementing what you want to see. Am I correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Which is so dope.
Yeah. Thank you. And, you know, and what I'd say is that, you know, what that means to me is a system of medicine where we connect with people.
Yeah.
Providers and patients connect. They form a long-lasting relationship that's meaningful, that's rooted in the health of all involved.
Love it.
And if you have that kind of relationship as the foundation of our system, I would argue you can't go wrong.
I agree. Right?
Like, there's always complications that, you know, you can't guarantee anything. But if people know that they're cared about, providers and patients,
yes,
then the rest takes care of itself.
Yeah.
And and it's more complicated than that. There have to be systems and there has to be a way to pay for it. But I believe that, you know, the type of medicine that we have in this country. And even, you know, speaking to people in Canada and other places where there are single payer systems, a lot of them feel the same things, surprisingly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we need to replace that. We still need that kind of care. But in my opinion, that shouldn't be the default. That shouldn't be the only thing. That's when you have the catastrophe, we still need the system.
Yeah.
But to the regular everyday health of people, the what we would consider primary care or regular care, however you want to define it, should be rooted in the health of everybody and a good healing connection.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I'd love to see it be proactive and preventative versus reactive.
Yes. Yes, yeah. Because, you know, all the problems that the system takes care of, we all know the vast majority of those are absolutely, completely preventable.
Totally.
I mean, look at what you're doing, you know, and we're over here treating symptoms. We're not getting to root causes. We're not dealing with the underlying issues. And this sort of branches into, you know, you cannot, in my opinion, look at a system alone, right? Like I'm a cardiologist and, I have good friends who are EPs, like they don't even, and they'll even say like, we don't even look at the whole heart. We just look at the electric, like all I do is the electrical system. That's it.
Yeah.
And I would say, okay, we need people who do that, but most of the people shouldn't, you know, you have to look at the whole human being.
Yes.
The psyche, the family relationships, the mental outlook, you cannot separate that from the heart condition. They are intertwined. And that confuses a lot of physicians because we're trained as technicians.
Yeah. In a and specific so, area.
Yeah. Putting the human back into the care, I think by default, you know, ends up emphasizing and accentuating the preventative, proactive, root cause type of care that frankly people really want. That's what they want.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so good. And what you said about it being on both sides is so important because I mean, the number of physicians I have talked to who are burnt out by the system themselves, their health is in disarray. I'm like, how are you out here? Like, you know what I mean? How are you helping anybody? You need help. Do you need an appointment? So it's so important.
and I agree absolutely with that. And I think what's important that a lot of people don't know is that when that situation arises for the providers, what it does is it drives an adversarial relationship with the patient.
Yes, yes.
The patient becomes the problem.
Yes.
Because the physician's strapped, they're exhausted. It's work. Now it's work for me to, like, it's more work and I'm already so drained.
Right.
And so people feel that.
Yeah, they do.
And you know, and it's not good for the providers. It's not good for the patients. And so, anyway, I don't want to belabor it, but
no,
I think
so good.
Yeah.
Let's talk about regenerative medicine. What does that mean? And how did you get into it?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I think regenerative medicine means something different than what it means to sort of the community at large. You know, regenerative medicine is usually sort of understood to be a branch of medicine that uses biologic therapies, meaning stem cells or PRP as two examples, to heal musculoskeletal injuries, meaning like shoulder issues, knee issues, spine issues, wear and tear issues or injuries, you know, ligament tears, cartilage tears, et cetera. But, and that's where we started about a decade ago, which was with stem cells and biologic injections for injury repair.
Okay.
Sort of a sports medicine kind of feel, you know. But what we found very quickly was that, you know, you can get outstanding results with those modalities, but you don't always. And the common denominator seems to be the health of the individual. And what we quickly came to realize was, listen, if you know, what are your stem cells? What are your platelets? What are they? They're your healing essence. It's how your body naturally creates inflammation and heals things. And so if your health is compromised, the healing capability of your stem cells and your platelets is compromised. And so what we found is that if you want optimal results from, you know, a sports medicine type of approach with a biologic, you get a way better result with somebody who's health optimized.
Right.
It makes complete sense. You know, well, why would I take a stem cell that's compromised and expect it to give me a result, the same result that you'd get from somebody who is in outstanding health? Like, no, somebody who's in outstanding health, their stem cells function way better because they're healthy. And so we found is if we'd have people come in and you're like, my back's killing me. I've done the steroids. I don't want to have surgery. I want stem cells. and we look at them and say, okay, we can help you with that, but we have to get you off the two diabetes medicines, one of the blood pressure medications, and the two cholesterol medications, because guess what? A lot of those, they poison the mitochondria. They have negative wow. effects on how the stem cell actually function. Hmm. And as you know, because of you're doing it, you know, in you know, perhaps a slightly different population, but you're doing the same thing mm-hmm. in a different system. And so you can fix, mm-hmm. like you can fix diabetes, most type 2 diabetes. You can mm-hmm. fix hypertension. Mm-hmm. You can fix high cholesterol. And lo and behold, you do that foundational work, you know, what a lot of people would call functional medicine or root cause or preventative yeah. medicine. But when you do that, the stem cells start functioning better.
Right.
And then a lot of times these people who are like, you guess what? Like my back pain's 90% better and we haven't done a single intervention.
That's so good.
We've just optimized the health. And so, you know, what we found was, listen, for regenerative medicine, and this is where I think like orthopedists and traditional providers, what they don't understand is they'll see a study that comes out and they're like, Pierre, it doesn't work for Achilles, you know, tendon tears. Mm. And I'll look at the study population. I'm like, the reason why this study didn't show a good outcome is because you're applying it to everybody without actually dealing with their underlying health issues. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so you're getting the result that I, from doing, working with these therapies for a decade, like you're getting the expected result. Like the study is giving you the correct result, mm-hmm. but you're not asking the right question. The question should be, mm-hmm. you know, if we optimize these people's health, most of them wouldn't need the injection anyway, because their body would just heal the tear.
Yes. Yeah.
And then in those people who do need an injection, you would see an improved result.
Yes. Yeah.
So for us, for me, to get back to your question, regenerative medicine, really, to do it properly, it requires the foundational underlying root cause preventative health that I think you alluded to earlier. And okay. when you do that and you utilize these biologic techniques, they work fantastically. Mm. So, you know, so we have a lot of clients who come in and they're a metabolic mess. Mm. And it can take sometimes a year. You know, you start with the diet, you use a foundation of data, which mm-hmm. You can really custom tailor people's diets now.
Yeah.
Specifically for their genetics and for their metabolic, you know, their current metabolic state.
Yeah.
And, you know, you start with those foundational changes, you start peeling back these chronic medications that aren't necessary, you unleash the power of the body to heal itself, and people live longer, happier, healthier lives.
I love it. I love it. It's like you went deeper, because the thing is that there's a lot of people even practicing functional medicine or holistic approaches and still kind of doing a Band-Aid thing where they're, you know, going for symptoms.
Yeah.
And it's so important what you just said, because it's like, yes, there's all these great tools, but if we get the if we don't have the foundation, then we're just kind of like, let me give you this injection. Let me do this, you know? Yeah.
So wow. Yeah, I agree 100%. You know, I would argue that what you're doing with PCOS and in sort of the OBGYN space, mm-hmm. you're doing the same. I would say, like, to me, that's regenerative medicine.
Right, right.
You know, now nobody knows, right? So everybody has a different idea what that term is.
Right, right.
And a lot of people, I think a lot of regenerative medicine clinics, they see a cash opportunity. And they're like, oh, we can make some good money doing these platelet injections. Like, we're going to do that.
Right.
And that's, they don't sort of make the next step, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what we do, I think, is very different than what a lot of regenerative medicine clinics do. I think we're a mixture of more functional regenerative. And let's face it, like, we use traditional tools all the time. We're traditionally trained. We use pharmaceuticals when they're necessary. We refer into the system. So that's my, for me, that's what regenerative medicine is.
I love that, because I feel like that is, that's what's going to promote longevity. I feel like that's where the whole longevity thing goes. If we use all of these great new tools, but we neglect the foundation, then we're not in the right space. Yeah. I think you're on the right plane, because it's like, you got to do the foundational stuff. And then it's like, ooh, there's these cool tools that can help accelerate me a little bit.
If you need them. And the reality is, you know, it's just like building a house. You can't build a house without a foundation.
Yes.
Or if you do, it won't be stable.
Yes.
And, you know, you do the foundational work, and then a lot of times, whatever the issues are, they take care of themselves.
So good. So good. What have you learned about mindset and healing and performing better, looking better, all the stuff that everybody wants? But how important is mindset, or what have you learned through, like, working with patients?
You know, I will go a step further than that and say also personally, mindset, you know, what a lot of people might call mental health, is absolutely one of the most important things about your health, your outlook, your life, how you live your life, how successful you are, how happy you are. And it cannot be extricated from your physical health. The thought that we can treat the lung, or treat the gallbladder, or treat the X name, put your system, organ, whatever issue here, without addressing what we're doing to ourselves, with our mind, is, I mean, it's ludicrous to me.
Right.
And, the importance of having a healthy personal, I don't know what the right term is, outlook, respect for yourself, respect for those around you, recognizing that, you know, and I'm not, you know, I don't have a particular, I guess I'm, you know, not denominational around spirituality, but I think everybody can sort of see, like, there's something divine in all of us.
Right.
And the world does not revolve around us. We are a part of something bigger.
Yes. Yeah.
And how do I fit into that?
Yeah.
How do I think about that? How do I contribute to the greater good? You love, compassion, forgiveness, self-respect, respect for others. You can't, I don't want to say you can't be healthy, but I actually, yeah, you can't, in my opinion, really be truly healthy without some form of grounding or understanding around that. And so, you know, I'm not a therapist. I'm not, you know, I don't have all the answers. But you know, having a healthy picture of whatever that is for you, I would argue you will not be healthy without that.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
Yeah, for sure.
So I don't know. Does that answer your question?
No, it does. It does. I think that all ancient forms of medicine, Chinese medicine, Ayurveda, all of them, like, take into consideration, like, your environment, spirituality, your purpose, all of that. I believe in supernatural healing. I happen to be Christian, and I've had supernatural healing experiences. So for me, it's so interesting, because it's like, you know, when we're practicing, we kind of remove the spirit aspect, right? But it's like, that's a part of it. Like, there are people who literally experience miracles. You know what I mean?
Well, I think anyone who, you know, and this is, you know, I have a beef with this whole evidence-based thing, because I'm not, I think it's important. We need to have evidence Mm-hmm. We need to have a foundation of knowledge that's built on, you know, some sort of understanding of in fact.
Yes.
And if you don't understand that we are more than that, we will always be more than what can be quantified on a spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody, no matter what belief system you come from, I think most people will agree with, you know, when you actually say it that way to people, we are all that and we're more.
Yeah.
We are more than what can be quantified in a study.
Yeah.
And can be written about. And to ignore that is to ignore what is fundamentally human.
Yeah.
What is fundamentally humane, what is fundamentally ethical. And that's hard for people because it's soft. It's hard to define. It's hard to understand for people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if we get down to brass tacks, I mean, what are most people really struggling with? Yes, there are health issues and symptoms and hard, you know, biologic processes. But at the root of that is something.
Yes.
That is undefinable.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of times.
And it exists, I would argue, perhaps almost every time. And I think this is where the ancient healers, like, they understood that there's an energy, there's a flow of this energy.
Mm-hmm.
It can be hard to understand for people who are very concrete.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, it is undeniable in my view.
Yeah, I agree.
So, you know, and then what I would say, I think maybe where you're going is, you know, so psychedelics are a part of our practice.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, you know, it's like, what? I mean, that's out of left field. But again, it goes back to sort of my through line from the beginning, which is, you know, when we opened the clinic, I was calling everybody I knew. And I have a very good friend who I trained in residency with.
Mm-hmm.
He started before me. He finished after me because he deployed so many times to Iraq and Afghanistan. He was the physician for his National Guard. I don't know what the term is, but his group that he was part of with the National Guard. And, you know, he said to me, he's like, Voss, if you're opening your clinic, you have to do ketamine therapy.
Hmm.
And I was like, what are you talking about? And he said, listen, you know, ketamine changed my life.
Wow.
And, but there's more, which I think you might be interested in. So he said, listen, ketamine fixes, it's the fix for anxiety, depression, and PTSD.
Hmm.
And, you know, he was the medical director of a VA emergency department. And he's like, I'm battling with the VA to try to get ketamine, low dose ketamine infusions, all these. I mean, this was a decade ago. He's like, they're putting them on opiates and atypical antipsychotics and antidepressants. And these guys are like, they're going crazy and they're killing themselves.
Jesus.
And they're miserable. And ketamine fixes them.
Wow.
And I have to fight, you know, everybody to do this. He's like, you have to do it because otherwise there's nowhere people can go.
Right.
And so I pulled the research and I looked and I was like, I had no idea. I mean, I'd used ketamine for years as a sedative, right? For pediatric procedures and some adult procedures, but in a low dose for anxiety, depression, PTSD, I'd never even heard of it.
Hmm.
But I saw it change lives.
Wow.
You know, somebody comes in literally like depressed, can't get out of bed, tried everything, done everything, walk in, ketamine infusion, walk out a different person, like spouses, like crying, like, what did you do to them? Like, I haven't
explain
seen them.
Explain what
like
ketamine is. What's ketamine? Explain
what ketamine. Yeah. So ketamine is, I mean, it's a psychedelic. It's a dissociative anesthetic. It's legal because it's used commonly as a sedative. It works very well in children. It's the kind of sedative you can use without intubation because it preserves the respiratory and the airway reflexes. So people still breathe. It's an easy way to, you know, somebody comes in and their femur's sticking out of their leg and you whack them down with ketamine, you reduce it, you put it under traction, And in a few minutes they're awake, and then they can be, you've bought them time so they can be taken to the OR later and it can really be fixed.
I see. Okay.
So ketamine's FDA approved. It's legal because you can get it if you're a licensed physician for the right reasons.
Okay.
It can be abused as a party drug, like many pharmaceuticals, but it has a knack for curing anxiety, depression, and PTSD. Now, it doesn't work for everybody. It works for most people. You know, it works for 60 to 70% of the people who use it.
Okay. And how long are they on this? Is it like an ongoing thing, or is it like, does it actually like level out at a point where people are like, I don't have to take this anymore?
This is the amazing thing. For most people, it's somewhere between 3 and 6 infusions. And so it's not like they're getting a script and they're going home with it. They come in, you put an IV in their arm, they get an infusion.
Okay.
They do that 3 to 6 times. And for most people, it cures their anxiety, their depression, their PTSD.
Whoa, that's a big deal. That's pretty good.
Well, the big deal, and we didn't understand why until actually very recently. So in the last like 18 months, the research has come out that it's not actually, there is a psychedelic that like, there's an experience that happens on the medication.
Okay.
That does not appear actually to be the reason why you can get long-term remission or cure of chronic mental illness. The reason why the long-term cure happens is ketamine boosts the brain's ability to produce brain-derived neurotrophic factor, or BDNF,
right?
And so, and so, what it does is now it makes people happy for a short period of time.
So it's like rewiring.
So people can see, they're like, wait. That's what happiness is. That's what relaxation is.
Right.
That's what not worrying is in the psychotropic experience.
Got it.
And then it provides the brain the ability to rewire the neural networks toward that. So it can happen very passively in some people. Most people, there needs to be an intentionality around it, meaning you show them a better place where they would rather be. And then they have to do some work, which is usually some therapy, some integrative practice, working on their issues. But through that, you can create, you know, if you have a default pathway that's depression, that's reflex because it's been that way for so long. Like your brain doesn't even know where happiness is, let alone how to get there.
Yeah.
And what ketamine does is it facilitates the rewiring of the pathway.
Whoa, that's super cool, actually.
It's fantastic. And you know, the thing is that other psychedelics do that too. So MDMA, which is why MDMA will be approved, FDA approved for PTSD probably this year.
Okay.
That phase 3 trial was like a smashing success. They've been working on it for over like 2 decades.
Okay.
So MDMA, guided therapeutic MDMA sessions, MDMA, guess what? MDMA, which is also a party drug, which can be abused.
Okay.
It also significantly boosts BDNF production. Psilocybin, which is now, I mean, it's decriminalized on a state level here in Colorado.
Okay.
You know, it's starting, you know, it's decriminalization like marijuana is starting to happen in other states. Guess what? Psilocybin does the same thing through a different receptor pathway.
Interesting.
So these psychedelics, which, you know, I grew up and it was like, you're going to go crazy if you take that stuff, right? Like they're highly stigmatized. You know, so they have the amount of therapeutic potential that exists in this medication class is enormous because if you think about now we have something that if used properly is actually very, very safe. I argue with the people who are the proponents who say, well, it's non-addictive. Like, listen, I've seen people who are addicted to drinking water and get hyponatremic, right? Like, so everything, we need to be careful not to step on that landmine again.
Right.
Everything can be addictive.
Right.
But if used properly, think about like the wave, like, well, think about all the other neurodegenerative disorders.
There's so many.
I mean, think about the dementia tidal wave that we all know is about to rock the Western world.
I have a question for you, though. Is there a way, like, my biggest thing sometimes is like the specificity of the treatment for that patient, right? So it's like, is there a way to kind of know either genetically or otherwise that this patient's going to respond well to this or not really? You just kind of have to.
The answer is someday we will probably, because we know like from the ketamine research, there are responders and non-responders.
Okay.
We don't know how to test or prognosticate for that yet.
Yeah.
Someday we probably will know.
Okay.
At this point, we don't. But I would argue, you know, short of like culture with specificity, we as physicians, if you have the space, we do that with antibiotics all the time.
That's true.
You know, like, well, we try this one and oh, that's the, you're not responding. Well, we got to switch you. But that takes thinking. It's not cookbooked. And this is where it gets back to, if you have a relationship with a patient that you care about, and they know you have their back, you can work through those things.
Yeah. And that part is very intuitive for me. So I know that a lot of people don't believe in, you know, medicine and intuition going together, but for me, my work is intuitive. You know, I really do have to look at the personality of the person, even as a behavioral coach. Like, I'm helping people change their habits, but I'm also dealing with your health issues. I got to know what's too much to say. I got to know what's too little to say. And then I also have to listen to what they're offering. What is your spirit telling you? What do you think about this? Do you like the supplement?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But you know, guess what? You're a healer. You are.
Yeah. Of course.
That's what a good, healing, supportive relationship requires.
Right.
You have to use the foundation of data and knowledge, and you have to honor the and more that we were talking about, which is what you're doing, I would argue.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you're doing it very, very well.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it's clear. I can see just from talking to you. And so this is what we're missing in our system.
Yeah, I agree. And patients can feel it. You know, I started my career at a weight loss clinic, and all of the patients started calling for me around the physicians to make appointments, you know? And I was like, I am not telling them anything. I swear. It's just, they can feel it. They could feel the difference sometimes, you know, where it's like, this doesn't feel right. I need someone in my corner. I want someone to really be caring about me, you know, really, to have a real sense of care. So, and I got the sense from looking at your work and looking at some of the past interviews that you're the same way. I got the sense that you actually care about your patients.
I do. Thank you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and you know what I would say is that, in the traditional setting, caring for people that way, it was killing me because it was one-way street. Do you know what I mean? It was like the cup was empty.
Yeah.
And I think this is where most providers fall into this trap.
Wow.
They're like, well, if I keep giving, I'm just like, my life force is, and they might not speak about it that way, but
right.
That is exactly what they're feeling.
Wow.
And when you flip the dynamic and you respect yourself and you respect your clients as much as you respect yourself.
Yes.
Guess what? That energy flows both ways.
Yes.
They're filling me up
as
I'm helping them.
Yes.
And you're right. Everybody knows it. And we just live in a time and a place where this is where I say, like, my beef with this, like, it's got to be evidence-based. Well, you know what? Sometimes there's no evidence for a miracle.
It's so true. all I can do is get the scans and be like, this is what happened.
And listen, every physician knows somebody who had stage four cancer and they were like, oh, your prognosis is, you know, you're going to be dead in 3 months or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and they're not, and they're fit. Exactly. Right. And so show me the data on that. Right. The answer is you can't, because that's operating on a different level, in a different plane, on a different, what I call it, what you want.
Exactly. Exactly.
So anyway.
So cool. So cool. I love this conversation. So I want to wrap it up with you. Can you explain where people can find you and also how you work? I do have a lot of practitioners who listen to this podcast, and I think they would like to, I think it would be helpful for them to hear how you work.
Yeah. How, meaning like from a day to day,
how you set up your practice. Yeah.
So I guess what I'll say is we have Rocky Mountain Regenerative Medicine, rmrm.com is our website, is a clinic that we founded here in Boulder, you know, 7 years ago. We are a small, concierge type regenerative medicine practice. We are low volume. You know, if I see four, you know, Monday I had a very busy day. I had four patients.
Yeah.
I spent at least 60 minutes with every one of them.
Awesome.
And we, you know, we practice, we have a wide, if you look at our website, we do all kinds of things. And what I would say is I would actually not focus, most doctors, when they're trying to figure out like, how do I transition out of this? Stay in your wheelhouse, use the tools you know how to use, but figure out how can you dig deeper and how can you create a scenario where you are like, it's easier than you think. Sit down and say, what would my day have to look like for me to be happy to walk in here every day?
Oh, that's good.
Mm-hmm. What is it that I need? What would make me happy?
Mm.
Write that down and do that. It's that simple.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
And people think, well, oh, that's not realistic. That's crazy. Listen, are you going to have to make some sacrifices to make that happen? Absolutely. But what I can tell you from my personal experience, are they absolutely worth it? Oh my gosh. My relationship with my wife has never been better. My relationship with my children has never been better. My relationship with my clients has never been better. Because I'm practicing, I'm happy. I'm with a group of people that I like working with. We're a great team. We work well together. And people feel it when they walk through the door.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if that directly answers your question. So Rocky Mountain Regenerative Medicine, we also are sort of new venture, which is the first step in, okay, how do we make this accessible to everyone?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, you know, longevityhealth.clinic. Longevity Health it's a very high end, executive type, full medical screening. So people often think of like, oh, I'm going to Mayo to get my executive screening.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? You're getting 40-year-old technology and lab testing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not cutting edge. It's not obsolete. It's completely obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing, you know, so really the plan with Longevity Health is you start high end to generate the revenue so that we can create the systems to be able to provide a cheaper product to people.
Love it.
And so that's what Longevity Health is. So we have our practice in Boulder, and longevityhealth.clinic is sort of the first step in how do we change the way medicine is practiced in this country. And that's I would say RMRM is step one, Longevity Health is step two, and stay tuned, because once we have the funding, we're going to be looking at how we can make this more accessible to more people.
I love that so much. You're doing such amazing work. You have such great energy. And I'm sure that your patients are benefiting from it. I really appreciate you and the work that you're doing. And I thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
And, you know, the feeling goes both ways. thank you. No, I mean it. You're fighting the good fight. And I think we both are. And I'm proud to be standing there next to you.
Awesome.
Are you interested in living your best, healthiest life? I'm Asosa E, also known as The Raw Girl of therawgirl.com, and I'm a certified nutrition specialist and behavioral coach who specializes in helping you discover what exercise and diet is best for your body and get to the root cause and rebalance if you have a serious chronic condition. Clients who've worked with me have reversed diabetes, hypertension, balanced hormonally, gotten rid of acne for good, and lost hundreds of pounds. If you are interested in reaching your health goals with some support this year, visit therawgirl.com to sign up for a 20-minute call with yours truly. Until then, stay healthy and happy. Attention, superfood lovers. You all may know that my favorite African superfood of all time is Moringa. Why? Moringa has 92 nutrients, 46 antioxidants, and all 8 essential amino acids, making it an amazing plant-based source of protein. Every part of the plant could be used. I personally use Moringa oil on my face daily, and I use Moringa powder to add my smoothies, make Moringa bread, or sprinkle on meals for added nutrition from a company called True Moringa. Founded in 2013, True Moringa is creating jobs and community with their amazing skincare and wellness products. The coolest part, every time you make a purchase from True Moringa, they plant a tree in your name. To date, they have planted over 3 million Moringa trees to combat deforestation and malnutrition in Ghana. To check out their awesome products, visit truemoringa.com and use the code RAWGIRL at checkout for 10% off and free shipping over $20. If you are already a diehard fan or becoming one, this year you have the opportunity to join their True Moringa Challenge and get free Moringa oil for a year, $104 in value. Customers who have used their oil say it helps to bring their skin back into balance, deeply moisturize, and minimize signs of premature aging. All you have to do is follow at The Raw Girl and at True Moringa on Instagram and email us at media@therawgirl.com with before and after photos or videos of your skin transformation after using the oil along with your story. Don't miss out on the chance to get a full year of product. Can't wait to hear from you.
All right. It is time to take a question from Instagram or email. Remember, if you want your question answered on the show, all you got to do is send me a DM, slide up in my DMs on Instagram at TheRawGirl, or contact me via my website, TheRawGirl.com. Today's question is from Denise via Instagram, who says, how do you envision the impact of regenerative medicine on extending human longevity? Are you optimistic about the possibilities it holds for healthier and longer lives? Hey, Denise. Yes, I believe that our interview today definitely answered that question. And I think it's going to have a great impact on longevity. But I believe the crux of what we got from today's talk is that if we do the groundwork, the basics, like sleeping, drinking enough water, you know, eating the right diet, getting away from processed foods, moving our bodies, if we do all the work to improve our habits and optimize our diet and lifestyle, if that becomes a standard, I do think that, you know, all of the bells and whistles and stem cells and regenerative medicine tools are going to be amazing for longevity. It's going to be a game changer because it's like you could go use the regenerative medicine more as a tune-up for a body that's already working at optimum level. So really, I hope that, you know, you listened to the interview and that you were inspired as much as I was, and that you are committed to doing the work that you need to do to improve your lifestyle and your diet and all that jazz, so that you can live your best, healthiest, and longest life. All right. It is time to close out today's show, sis. I hope you found this session informative and inspiring. Honestly, one of my favorite conversations of all time on the Staying Ages podcast. I hope you learn more about bioindividuality, about how personalized nutrition does matter, along with what regenerative medicine is and how it can be an asset to you on your longevity journey. If you have any questions or you would like to share your experiences with implementing any of these holistic approaches into your life, feel free to leave a comment or reach out to me on Instagram at The Raw Girl. Until next time, stay motivated and continue to make choices that move you towards living your best, healthiest life, okay? Today, I leave you with a quote from Ann Wilson Schaaf. Good health is not something we can buy. However, it can be an extremely valuable savings account. Well, that's all for today, sis. If you're looking for more health tips or have a question for the show, find me on Instagram at The Raw Girl. You can also find me and contact me through my website, therawgirl.com. To watch my free diet training, the 6 keys to determine your ideal diet, visit therawgirl.com/6ways free class. And to watch my free hormone training, the secret to resetting your hormones, even if you have fibroids, endometriosis, PCOS, or heavy bleeding, visit therawgirl.com/free-training. For more on this show or to listen to past episodes, visit stayingagelessshow.com.